A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know that moment when you hand over your passport and the officer just stares at their screen? 10 seconds of silence, and your brain starts cycling through every minor crime you've ever committed.
Including the time you smuggled eucalyptus leaves through Ben Gurion.
That was medicinal, and I stand by it. But that silence, that's what Daniel's asking about. He sent in a whole list of questions about what's actually happening at passport control. The official process, what information gets checked, what determines whether you're waved through or pulled aside, what databases are being queried, and how the officer decides so fast. He also wants to know about the behavioral cues officers look for, and whether the system is designed to catch criminals or manage risk.
That last one is the key, actually. That's the frame that makes everything else make sense.
So where do we start?
With what this isn't. It's not a criminal investigation. It's not even really about catching bad people in some absolute sense. There's a paper from 1991 by Janet Gilboy, Deciding Who Gets In, that studied this directly by observing immigration inspectors at a major U.S. airport. What she found is that the booth is a triage system. The officer's job is to sort every traveler into one of two categories, referable or non-referable. Referable means you go to secondary inspection. Non-referable means you get waved through.
So the question isn't, is this person suspicious? It's, does this person match a profile that needs more checking?
And they have to make that call in 10 to 30 seconds with imperfect information while a line of impatient people stacks up behind you. Gilboy's research identified what she called categorical rules of thumb, mental shortcuts based on nationality, visa type, travel history, and what she called presentation of self. The officer isn't trying to solve a mystery. They're trying to process volume.
Which explains why the whole thing feels so impersonal. You're not being evaluated as a unique individual. You're being sorted into a bucket.
And most buckets are the wave-through bucket. That's the default. The system is designed to be fast and conservative. Clear the obvious cases, flag the ambiguous ones for someone with more time.
All right, so walk me through the layers. I hand over my passport. What happens first?
The visible layer, document examination. Before anything electronic happens, the officer is looking at the passport itself, the physical object. They're checking the cover for tampering, the binding, whether the laminate on the data page looks right. Modern passports have an absurd number of security features. Holograms that shift when you tilt them, microprinting so small it blurs under a photocopier, ultraviolet images that only show up under the booth's UV light, intaglio printing you can feel with a fingernail.
Intaglio?
Raised ink. Like on a banknote. Run your finger over the lettering on a passport data page and you'll feel the texture. That's incredibly hard to forge well. Most forged passports fail at this stage before any database gets queried. The font spacing is slightly wrong. The laminate's got bubbles. The stitching on the binding doesn't match the issuing country's spec.
And I assume they're trained to spot this in seconds.
Pattern recognition. They see hundreds of passports a day. A forgery stands out the way a typo jumps off a page when you've been proofreading for hours. Then they flick to the machine-readable zone at the bottom of the data page, those two lines of letters, numbers, and chevrons.
The bit that looks like a receipt from 1985.
That's the one. They scan that, and it pulls the traveler's name, nationality, passport number, date of birth, and document expiration date. That data string is standardized by ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization. Every passport in the world uses the same format. The scanner reads it in under a second.
And then the chip.
The biometric layer. The passport has an RFID chip embedded in the cover. The officer's reader sends out a radio signal. The chip wakes up and transmits its data wirelessly. That chip contains your facial biometric, a digital template of your face, and sometimes fingerprints depending on the country. The officer's terminal compares the live image from the camera at the booth to the stored biometric. In a lot of countries, this happens automatically before the officer even speaks to you. The system has already matched your face to the chip by the time they say, "Passport, please."
And if it doesn't match?
That's a referable case right there. But here's the thing. The chip read fails a lot more than people realize. 5 to 10% of passports don't read cleanly on the first try. The antenna inside the cover gets bent. The chip delaminates from the page. The passport got wet. Someone sat on it in their back pocket for 6 hours on a flight from Singapore. When the chip fails, the officer has to fall back on visual inspection, comparing your face to the printed photo, checking security features by eye, slower and more subjective.
So 1 in 10 to 1 in 20 travelers is getting a different experience at the booth, and they don't even know it.
Right. They just notice the officer frowning at the screen a little longer, maybe tapping the passport against the reader. And that's when the heuristics kick in hardest, because the officer has less objective data and has to rely more on the categorical rules of thumb.
What about the databases? That's the part Daniel really wanted to understand.
This is where it gets fast. The passport number triggers a cascade of database queries. The big one is iInterpol's Stolen and Lost Travel Documents database, the SLTD. Over 100 million records. Every passport reported, lost or stolen anywhere in the world, goes into that database. The query returns in under 2 seconds.
100 million. That's a lot of lost passports.
People are careless. And some of those aren't carelessness. They're identity fraud. Someone reports their passport stolen, sells it, and the buyer tries to travel on it. A hit on SLTD doesn't mean the traveler is a criminal. It means the document was reported lost. Could be fraud, could be a tourist who lost their passport in Bangkok, found it under the hotel bed, and didn't think to update the report.
But the system flags it either way.
It flags it. Then the officer has to decide. Simultaneously, the system is querying national watch lists. In the U.S., CBP uses a system called TECS. It's been around since the 80s, though it's been upgraded repeatedly. TECS queries terrorist watch lists, criminal records, visa overstay history, and what's called derogatory information from intelligence agencies. All in parallel, all returning results in under 2 seconds. Other countries have their equivalents. The UK has the Warnings Index. Australia has the Movement Alert List. The queries overlap, but they're not identical. iInterpol SLTD is the one that's nearly universal.
And travel history?
Stored in national databases, not on the chip. The chip doesn't contain your travel history. That's a common misconception. It's got your biometric template and your document details. Your entry and exit records live in the destination country's immigration database. So when you land, the officer can see your previous visits, whether you overstayed last time, whether there's a pattern that doesn't match what you're claiming.
What kind of pattern?
You say you're here for a 3-day business trip, but the system shows you spent 6 months here last year on a tourist visa. You claim you've never been to the country before, but there are 3 entry stamps from the past 2 years. You're traveling on a fresh passport with no travel history at all, which in some profiles is itself a flag. None of these are proof of anything. They're just data points that nudge the officer toward or away from the referable bucket.
And then there's the behavioral layer. The part where the officer asks you questions.
How long are you staying? What's the purpose of your visit? Where will you be staying? These aren't interrogation. They're rapid heuristics. The officer is listening for consistency. Does your answer match what's in the system? Does it match what your visa says? Does it match what someone with your stated purpose would plausibly say? They're also watching demeanor, eye contact, hesitation, sweating, fidgeting. A traveler who can't answer, "Where are you staying?" without a long pause is going to get a second look.
But that's also where things get messy.
This is where Gilboy's research gets uncomfortable. She found that officers develop occupational stereotypes, mental shortcuts based on nationality, age, gender, travel patterns. Certain nationalities, or visa types, get flagged for secondary inspection at higher rates regardless of individual behavior. The officer isn't necessarily being racist in a personal sense. They're applying a categorical rule of thumb that says, this profile has a higher rate of immigration violations, therefore, check more carefully.
The outcome is the same, whether the intent is malicious or not.
It is, and the system reinforces itself. If you pull aside more travelers from a particular country, you find more violations, not necessarily because the rate is higher, but because you're looking harder. That's a well-documented feedback loop in screening systems. The data makes the bias look like accuracy.
So the officer's decision framework is this mix of objective database hits, subjective behavioral assessment, and categorical shortcuts, all compressed into about 15 seconds.
And the pressure runs both ways. Officers are evaluated on throughput, how many travelers they process per hour, and error rate, how many inadmissible people they let through. The UK Border Force trains officers on what they call the three C's: check the document, challenge with questions, control by making a decision. The target is under 30 seconds for a routine case. Process fast, but don't miss the one that matters.
That's an impossible tension.
It's an impossible tension that they've decided to live with. The system accepts a certain error rate in both directions. Some inadmissible people get waved through because the profile looked clean. Some legitimate travelers get pulled aside because something didn't quite line up. The asymmetry is that being pulled aside feels personal. You're standing there while someone rummages through your bag and asks the same questions three times. But to the officer, it's just triage. They're not accusing you of anything. They're saying the system couldn't reach a confident decision in 30 seconds, so someone with more time needs to look at it.
Secondary inspection can take anywhere from 5 minutes to 2 hours.
And most people are eventually admitted. That's the part that gets lost. Being pulled aside isn't a denial. It's a request for more information. But try telling your nervous system that when you're standing at the booth and the officer says, "Please come with me."
What about the automated gates? The e-gates? Daniel didn't ask about those specifically, but they're part of where this is heading.
Australia's smart gate system processes over 70% of travelers automatically. You scan your passport at the gate, look into a camera, the system matches your face to the chip biometric, checks the databases, and opens the gate. No human officer involved. The remaining 30% get referred to a human, and those are exactly the cases where the algorithm couldn't make a confident decision.
Which means the human officers are increasingly handling only the ambiguous cases.
The hard ones. The ones where the chip failed, or the travel history is complicated, or the name is a near match to someone on a watch list. That's a harder job than what they were doing before, because the easy cases have been skimmed off by automation. Every traveler who reaches a human officer now is someone the machine already flagged.
And those are exactly the cases where the categorical rules of thumb get applied hardest.
Because the officer has less to go on. The machine already couldn't decide, so now a person has 30 seconds to figure out what the algorithm couldn't. That's a lot of pressure, and it pushes officers toward conservative decisions. When in doubt, refer. Better to send 10 innocent people to secondary than let one inadmissible person through.
Which brings us back to that 5-10% chip failure rate. If the chip doesn't read, the automated gate can't process you at all. You're immediately referred to a human, and you're starting from a position of something didn't work.
And you might not even know it. You just think the gate is being finicky. But on the officer screen, your record is flagged as a chip read failure, which means they're doing visual inspection, which means they're relying more on heuristics. The technology failure cascades into a human judgment situation.
So being pulled aside isn't necessarily suspicion. Sometimes it's just a technical glitch.
The chip delaminated because you left your passport in a hot car. The antenna snapped because you sat on it. The database query timed out because the network was slow. None of that's about you as a person, but you experience it as, "They're checking me more carefully." The system's confidence is only as good as its weakest link, and the chip reader is that link.
Let me ask you something. Daniel framed this partly as, is the system designed to catch criminals or manage risk? What's your answer?
Manage risk. Unequivocally, catching criminals is a possible byproduct, but that's not what the booth is optimized for. It's optimized for throughput with an acceptable error rate. Think about the math. A major international airport processes tens of thousands of arrivals per day. If every traveler got a 5-minute interview, the whole system would collapse. So you design a system that clears 95% of people in under 30 seconds and funnels the uncertain 5% to a slower, more thorough process. That's risk management, not law enforcement.
The 5% includes some criminals and a lot of innocent people who happen to match a profile or had a chip failure.
And the 95% includes some people who shouldn't have been waved through but look clean enough. The system knows this. It's a calculated trade-off.
Daniel also asked about behavioral cues specifically. What are officers actually trained to look for?
Inconsistency is the big one. Answers that don't match the documentation. A stated purpose of visit that doesn't align with the visa type. A hotel address that doesn't exist or was booked 5 minutes before landing. Excessive nervousness in someone who should be a routine traveler, though that one's tricky because plenty of innocent people get nervous at borders. Avoiding eye contact. Giving answers that are too rehearsed. Or the opposite. Being unusually aggressive or confrontational.
The how dare you question me approach.
Which is almost always counterproductive. Officers are trained to notice it because genuine travelers who have nothing to hide tend to be cooperative, not hostile. But again, these are heuristics, not science. A tired traveler who just got off a 14-hour flight might be irritable and look shifty. That doesn't make them a security risk.
What about the stamps? Do the stamps still matter in a world of digital records?
Less than they used to, but they're not irrelevant. An officer can glance at a passport full of stamps and get a quick read on travel patterns. Frequent traveler to low-risk countries, probably fine. First international trip, passport has no stamps. Traveling from a high-fraud region, that's going to get more scrutiny. The stamps are a visual shortcut that complements the digital records. And in some countries, the entry and exit stamps are still the legal record of admission. The database is supplementary, not primary.
So the whole thing is layers. Physical document check, chip read, database queries, behavioral observation, categorical heuristics, all compressed into 10 to 30 seconds.
And most of the time, most of those layers return a clean result before the officer even speaks. The chip matches, the databases are clear, the travel history is consistent with the stated purpose, the traveler looks calm and answers questions directly. Wave through. Next.
It's almost more interesting to think about what happens when one of those layers doesn't return clean.
That's the whole game. The system is designed around the assumption that most layers will be clean most of the time. When one layer fails, the chip doesn't read, or the name is a partial match to a watch list entry, or the travel history is ambiguous, the officer has to decide whether that single anomaly is enough to refer. And that decision is where all the biases and heuristics and systemic pressures converge.
The chip failure rate is higher than 5 to 10%, actually.
Go on.
Closer to 12, maybe 15, depending on the reader and how old the passport is. I spent most of 2009 training UK border agency officers on the e-passport gates. The manual said 5%. I told them to expect 1 in 8. The readers they'd bought were the cheaper tender. The antennas in the passports were fine. It was the readers that were the problem. They'd overheat after about 40 minutes of continuous use, and the read success rate would drop off a cliff. Officers would be standing there banging passports against the desk, thinking it was the chip.
That's a significant difference. 1 in 8 versus 1 in 20.
I pointed it out in a training session in front of a regional director. Suggested the manual was, let's say, optimistic about reliability in anything other than laboratory conditions. They let me finish the contract and didn't renew. I wasn't surprised.
So for about 12 to 15% of travelers, the entire automated layer fails before the human interaction even begins.
And the traveler doesn't know. They just see the gate not opening and an officer waving them over. They assume they've been flagged for something. In reality, the reader's been running for 3 hours and can't get a clean read off a perfectly valid passport. The officer knows this, but they still have to do the full manual check. And they're doing it knowing they've got a queue building up behind them, because the machines are slow today.
That reframes the whole discussion. A significant fraction of secondary referrals might be driven by equipment failure rather than any risk indicator.
I couldn't give you a number on that. But I can tell you that on a bad day at Heathrow Terminal 5, when 3 of the 8 gates had readers that were acting up, the referral rate to human officers would double. Not because the travelers were different, because the machines were.
And those travelers got the full behavioral assessment from an officer who was already frustrated.
Frustrated, behind on throughput targets, and applying heuristics to compensate for equipment he knew was unreliable. That's not in any training manual. But it's what actually happens.
The categorical rules of thumb Gilboy identified. They'd get applied even more aggressively in that scenario. The officer has less objective data, more time pressure, and a queue that's getting longer. That's exactly the situation where you reach for shortcuts.
Nationality and visa type. If the chip won't read, and the traveler's from a country with a high overstay rate, they're getting referred. If the chip won't read, and it's a German business traveler on their 12th trip that year, they'll probably get a visual check and a wave through. Same equipment failure, different outcome.
The bias doesn't just live in the officer's head. It's built into a system where technology failures get resolved by human judgment, and human judgment falls back on stereotypes.
I wouldn't put it quite like that, but I wouldn't say you're wrong either.
Did you ever see the chip problem get fixed?
They replaced the readers eventually. 3 years later, different tender, better spec. But passports age. A passport issued in 2018 that's been through 8 countries and 2 washing machines, the chip's not going to read like a fresh one. The problem doesn't go away. It just moves around.
The weakest link keeps shifting, but it never disappears.
That system's for you.
The thing that strikes me about this is how invisible it's to the traveler. You hand over your passport, the officer looks at a screen, you get waved through, or you don't. You have no idea whether the chip read successfully, whether your name triggered a partial watchlist match, whether the officer was applying a categorical rule or responding to something specific about your behavior. The whole process is opaque by design.
By design?
Partly by design, partly by accident. The databases are classified. The watchlist matching algorithms are proprietary. The officer's training on behavioral indicators isn't public. But even if none of that were true, the speed of the interaction means there's no time for transparency. The officer isn't going to explain, "Your chip failed to read, so I'm doing a manual check." They're just going to do the manual check.
You're standing there constructing a narrative about why you're being scrutinized.
Which is almost certainly wrong. You think it's because you look nervous, or because of your nationality, or because you booked a one-way ticket. In reality, the chip reader is overheating, and the officer is just trying to clear the queue before their break.
That's almost worse. The randomness of it.
The randomness is what makes it feel personal, even when it isn't. If there were a clear, consistent reason every time, you could at least understand it. But when the system is a black box that sometimes fails for purely technical reasons, your brain fills in the gap with the worst possible explanation.
Which brings us to the future. If automated gates are handling 70% of travelers, and that number keeps going up, what happens to the human judgment layer?
It gets concentrated on the hardest cases. Every traveler who reaches a human officer is someone the algorithm already flagged as ambiguous. That means the officer's job gets harder over time. They're seeing a higher proportion of complicated cases, edge cases, system failures. And they're expected to make decisions just as fast.
Do the heuristics get encoded into the algorithms?
That's the open question. Australia's smart gate refers 30% of travelers to humans, the cases the algorithm can't decide. But how does the algorithm decide? It's looking at the same data points the human officer would. Nationality, visa type, travel history, biometric match confidence. If the training data reflects historical patterns of referral, and those historical patterns were shaped by the categorical rules of thumb, Gilboy identified, then yes, the bias gets baked in. Not because anyone programmed it in deliberately, but because the algorithm learned from human decisions that were already biased.
The algorithm doesn't get tired or frustrated or overheated. But it inherits the biases of the officers whose decisions trained it.
Without the human ability to override the heuristic when something doesn't feel right, an experienced officer might look at a traveler who matches a high-risk profile on paper and think, no, this one's fine. A gut check based on years of experience. An algorithm doesn't have a gut. It has a probability threshold.
You trade one set of problems for another.
You trade inconsistent human judgment for consistent algorithmic judgment that may be consistently wrong in ways that are harder to detect because they're buried in a model. One detail from the research that didn't quite fit anywhere else. The Interpol SLTD database, the one with over 100 million lost and stolen passports. Only a fraction of countries actually report into it consistently. The database is enormous, but it's got gaps. A stolen passport from a country that doesn't report promptly might not show up for weeks or months. The system looks comprehensive, and in most cases it is, but the coverage isn't uniform.
Which means a determined fraudster who knows which countries are slow to report can exploit that window.
It's a known vulnerability. iInterpol has been pushing for real-time reporting, but not every member country has the infrastructure or the political will to make it happen. The database is only as good as the data that goes into it.
That's a good note to land on. The whole system is a stack of imperfect layers, documents that can be forged, chips that fail 12% of the time, databases with gaps, algorithms trained on biased decisions, and human officers applying shortcuts under time pressure. And somehow, most people get waved through in 10 seconds.
Because most people are low-risk travelers with valid documents and consistent travel histories. The system works adequately for the 95% case. It's the edges where it gets interesting, and where the costs of being wrong fall hardest on individuals who can't see why they were flagged.
Next time you're standing at the booth watching the officer stare at their screen, remember, it might not be about you at all. The chip reader might just be overheating.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the machines running and the manuals honest.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. Or email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.